symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Hello and welcome to the Monday Mailbag with Dr. Tom Pritchard, exclusively heard here on ad-free shows. How are you this week, Dr. Tom?
Well, I'm doing great this week, thanks.
Ah, that's great to hear. It's always a pleasure to see your smiling face.
You know what? That's what I'm saying, man. A lot of people want to know how you're really doing. They really don't want to know how you're really doing. But I tell you, if I'm not feeling good, I'm going to let you know, man. I'm going to go in detail. That's what people hate about me most.
But, you know, I'd appreciate that. And that's what all of our listeners appreciate. They want the real, the gritty, the raw, Dr. Tom. And you're going to find that right here on the mailbag.
Are you talking about all those 12 people that listen?
We got more than 12, man. This is people are digging this. You should check out the comments that I'm seeing. I'm getting direct messages. They're like, man, Dr. Tom, who knew this guy would be such a great storyteller, so much fun? I mean, he's just been amazing to listen to.
Well, who would say who knew? I mean, that sounds like you're expecting something completely opposite.
They thought all your skills were just training people in the ring. They didn't realize you were such a pontificator on the mic.
Little do they know, I pontificated early this morning.
That's true. True as that. Well, let's get started because we got another round of questions to fire your way. And of course, as always, it seems like he's always the first guy to get his question in. We start with Money Mike, Michael McClanahan. And he says, Dr. Tom, how do you teach students not to be distracted by all the pomp and circumstance of these big grand events or the big stages, these pay-per-views, these WrestleManias? How do you teach them to be focused when it comes time to do their thing?
I don't know that it's up to someone to teach them. I think it's up to them to feel that moment and to build into that moment to get to that moment. I think that's what everybody really wants to do. When you get into professional wrestling, I think it was Scott Hall who says you don't get in this to be a mid-card guy. Well, okay, but you get in this because you want the pomp and circumstance. You want to be noticed. You have to have a performer's ego. And if you don't have that, I don't know if you can teach that. You got to feel that. You can lead someone there and give them confidence. I believe I've seen it happen too, where people have gained their confidence. But the pomp and circumstance and the grand events and the big stage is what everybody should aspire to be on, and then soak it in, enjoy the journey, enjoy the moment. So I teach people, or I try to teach people again, how to go in there and do it as second nature, where it's authentic, it's natural, and you don't have to think about it. And this is the same thing. Wrestling is involved in circumstance and pomp and circumstance and all the grand things that we all watched it for and loved it for.
I can imagine the last thing you want to be, to your point, be nervous about is what you're going to do in the ring. You, like you said, you want to know that like the back of your hand. So if you have the butterflies, it's because of maybe the reaction and the adrenaline and the energy. Yeah.
And I think a great pro, I think a performer should have butterflies. I still get butterflies. Even if somebody asked me to cut a promo about a show or put something on, I still get butterflies when I'm out there in front of people sometimes, just having to talk to them.
Sure. Oh, it's natural, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when you don't do it all the time, or, you know, and you got to get up there. And
I think so. And I think it's just part of your makeup, and you should at least be excited somewhat when you're going out to perform. So
what do they say? If you're not nervous, then there's something wrong with you. You know?
If you're not nervous, it's time to quit, I think. If you're not getting excited, or at least thinking about it and getting that buzz. Again, we can go back to WrestleMania, where Vince took probably the world's worst stunner. Doesn't matter. He was having fun. People were having fun. The people were laughing. They're going to remember that as the worst stunner. But as long as you remember it and talk about it, I think is a key.
Michael has some more questions. He said, what are Dr. Tom's thoughts on individuals who use professional wrestling as launching pads to other professions? And he gives the example of The Rock, who, by the way, in the last several weeks ago, turned 50. He went on to Hollywood, or Brock Lesnar, who went to the UFC before returning to WWE. So what do you think about that?
I think it's great. If being on TV and being on WWE got other people interested and excited, That's tremendous. And my God, how could you? This has been happening forever. You know, these aren't the first guys who went into movies and did stuff after the wrestling career. But I think it's great. Nothing says, well, except maybe Rock's deal with good cause. Nothing really says you can't keep wrestling if you want to. But man, when you get to a certain point, you get to a certain age. I always heard Kevin Sullivan say he wanted to be like the Sheik, Ed Farhat, and wrestle till he was 65 years old. So I didn't want to do that much, but once you get to that point, you know, you have to realize your body can take so much.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of guys who wrestled. Bob Armstrong worked into his 70s, you know, but he wasn't he wasn't really doing a whole lot of flip-flopping flying. But the fact is, he loved the business. He loved being around the business, and take it for what it's worth. But my God, Bob Armstrong in the locker room at any age was an education. Was a hell of a time. Was a hell of a moment to be in there. And when you had an old pro who had seen it all in his lifetime, sit in the locker room, make jokes, talk, engage with the guys, and again have that aura at 70 whatever years old as the guy who was this mythical figure, man. And so anyway, I think it's great for the guys to move on and get other careers in Hollywood.
And you also got to think, anytime it's a person or an individual can expand their ability to earn an income in a variety of ways, that's a huge win.
I mean, yes, but certainly, why not take advantage of the stardom they had in WWE? Because a lot of people watched them, and a lot of people in the entertainment business watched WWE during the boom period. And it just makes sense.
Making money hand over fist. Now The Rock is, he's got his own tequila. He's got his own production company. I mean, a movie, just money, just flowing. Like it's just growing on trees for that guy.
Well, but it didn't come easy. A lot of people don't look at the hard work that goes into it. In those 19, 20 hour days.
Well, the other thing too is that I wanted to bring out here is you were talking about Bob Armstrong, and you were just sharing when you first hear the name Bob Armstrong, a guy that worked until he's in his 70s. Your fondest memories, do they go back to the times behind the scenes in the locker rooms?
A lot of times, Bob?
Yeah.
Well, oh no, man. Yeah, well, definitely behind the scenes, but in the ring as well. But with those guys, and I bring up Bob Armstrong a lot because him and his sons, but especially Brad, were the life of the party, the life of the locker room, the ones who made it the straw that stirred the drink, and they made it fun and they made it interesting, and they also made it made you proud to be a wrestler at times. So yeah, the backstage stuff really made a lot of difference, and they knew how to interact.
I ask because it's great to hear, because you don't necessarily hear about guys like Bob Armstrong behind the scenes. There's not a whole lot of guys telling stories about guys like him.
Well, because I don't know that there's a lot of guys still around, you know, except Tommy Rich and the old Atlanta crew or Continental crew who had the opportunity to know Bob and to know the Armstrongs. You know, that was one of the first families you talk about in the Southeast, I truly believe, have to be the Armstrongs. And Bob Armstrong is a legend in the Atlanta, Pensacola, Continental area, that part of the country. But he had been all over the place. He'd done his time. And I think once you met Bob, you remember Bob. He was a badass, no doubt. And I've seen him. I've seen him growl. I've seen him snatch people off a motorcycle. And he's one of those guys who, such a great guy who could turn on a dime and you don't want him mad at you. I sure as hell didn't want him mad at me.
Doesn't sound like it. There you go.
No.
Ben Ledbetter's back this week, and he said, how was it training wrestlers with Dory Funk Jr. at the Funkin' Dojo?
It was really cool. It was in Stanford at the studio in off Hamilton Avenue. And, of course, man, growing up watching the Funks in West Texas, Dory is champion, then Terry, and just following that lineage and following the stuff that Dory did. And now I've not only wrestled him and had a career, now I'm training with Dory Funk Jr., teaching other people how to do this was kind of surreal. It really was. And Dory has his method. Dory has his way of doing things. I learned a lot watching him do things. I learned a lot hearing him do things.
I was going to ask you, what was a take? Do you have one takeaway that you learned from Dory while you were there that you still kind of incorporate into your training?
Stay calm. Don't fly off the handle. Stay calm. It's wrestling. It's not, we're not doing rocket surgery here. It's really not. We're teaching people how to wrestle. And Dory stayed calm. And even when you could see he might be frustrated, I'm looking for that gleam in his eye. He was calm. So that was the one thing I take away. Just relax. It's okay. It'll work out if you let it work out. If you start screaming and scrambling and yelling too much, you're going to lose it. You're going to lose everything you were working for. So just calm down. If you're not getting it today, we're going to sit on this and put it over here. We're going to work on something else, and we'll come back to this when we need to. And that's what I took away from Dory for sure.
The two of you and what you did there and the talent that you worked with and that you trained, man, that's your legacy, Dr. Tom, in the business. So many Hall of Famers, it's a huge part of your legacy, should I say, will be just the talent that you guys had your hands over on and worked with and that are now Hall of Famers. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's very cool. I thought I had a great time, and I think it's very, very cool with all the guys that came in, man. And yeah, even the things I'm learning, some of the guys who came through, I didn't remember they came through, and I saw some at Raw this past week, man, and who came up and said, I when I was going through developmental, I got cut, and then I came back, and you weren't here, but yeah, no, it's a very cool thing.
Well, it really talk is. About I the guy who just had his 20-year anniversary. You got to talk to him a little bit, didn't you? Randy Orton.
Just, yeah, Randy tells me about the time again when he came in, we got in the ring, and he tells me the story where he gave me a tackle, and he said, I looked up at him and said, we're done, and I probably did, you know, but... But I remember Randy coming through that day. I remember locking up with him and guys like Kurt Angle. And those guys were special in the sense that when you lock up with somebody, that's like a handshake. And that's your signature, too, I think, in the business. You know, if you're too stiff, too loose, or just right. And guys like Randy were just right. He just had that instinct. And so did Kurt.
What did and you were saying, telling me too, what did Bob Orton say to Randy about his training? He didn't want him really training in the.
Well, he didn't want him training in St. Louis. He didn't want him being around the knuckleheads that were in St. Louis at the time, because what a lot of guys don't understand the only reason I can talk on this is because they are examples and they've actually happened, so I can point to this. This is what happens. You know, guys go out there and they think they have to hit as hard as they can or move as fast as they can or do stupid stuff as fast as they can. When I say stupid stuff, just moves for no reason, flip, flop, and fly. You need that in a match. You need high spots. You need excitement, no doubt. But it has to mean something. And when you go out there and you're working with a guy, let's say he's had maybe two matches, and you've been in the business 4 years in the Indies, in Tennessee or the southern states especially, but they have goofs everywhere, and you're rushing, and the guy you're working with had three matches and he doesn't know. A sign of being a pro is to help your opponent get through that match, make it, keep it simple, make it basic. and tell a story. Know how to tell a story with someone who doesn't know as much as you. Lead them through it. Take your time. Show your patience. Show your professionalism. And that's going to get you noticed even more. But so many times, what Bob was talking about, the guys want to go out there and do all these crazy things and hit with the light tube.
Crazy spots.
Yeah. Crazy spots. And you're going to get hurt if you don't know what you're doing. I'm not saying don't do them. I'm saying don't try and pack 20 pounds of crap or 40 pounds, 50 pounds, what, 100 pounds in a 5-pound bag. And it's what a lot of guys try and do. They try and cram all this stuff in there. And then when the guy doesn't get it, and then you start beating him up and say, no, man, come on, I'm not going to stop. You got to make it stop. See, that is the most Mickey Mouse, mud show, independent outlaw crap.
And that's why it was important for Bob as to where Randy trained.
That is correct. That is exactly right, because otherwise you're going to get that mindset and you're ruined. But I think Randy was smart enough to understand what those guys are doing, what he saw his dad doing was two different things. Yeah. So, yeah, that's part of the deal.
All right, good stuff. Devin Dowling is up next, and he says, Dr. Tom, would you ever have liked to have been in a WWE video game, or were you in one that I missed? Were you ever in a video game, Dr. Tom?
Really? Really? Devin? Hold on. So, you know the Warrior Award, right?
Yeah.
You know who it's named after?
That's right.
Jimmy Miranda. He got it for Jimmy Miranda, who was the gimmick guy for WWE. I'll never forget. And we talk about the Body Donors, why it's so... why there's such a sour taste in my mouth. One night, Jimmy Miranda went to everybody in the locker room, including Sonny, who didn't come to Chris, didn't come to me. Would I have loved to have been a video game? Yes. Would I love to have video gimmicks and merchandise? Yes. Why didn't we?
He stopped with Sonny.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to. Thanks for bringing that up.
Thanks for bringing that.
Here, you want to cut me some more? Let's just open it all up, pal.
The doctor's getting surgery done on him, and there's no repair. Yeah, man,
I mean, for Christ's sake, who wouldn't? But the fact is that you didn't told me where we stood, and that was the thing. It was up to us. Yeah, up to go to management or whoever it was.
Sorry, I was singing the Chris, first few bars of Sonny's theme song there.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you know it, because I never knew it. But the point is, you know, nobody gave us the respect or courtesy to even play like you're going to come around to do this. So, yeah, shit, I'd love to be in a video game. Thanks for bringing that up.
Well, hey guys, you can maybe create a custom character. You could do a long-haired version of Dr. Tom. You could do, you know, the zip version of Dr. Tom, but they give you that custom ability, I believe. And if you come up with one and want to send us a picture, we'd love to see it. I'll send it to Dr. Tom, and
be wonderful.
There you go. Okay. Devin Dowling continues. He said, really happy to enjoy this podcast biweekly, but you two replaced the mailbag with Gerald Briscoe and Taylor Williamson. Well, listen, this is how that went. They moved on to bigger and better things. They're doing a breakfast now. They do a monthly breakfast show. And they were like, listen, Dr. Tom and Paul were such a hit with X-Ray. We got to bring them in every other week for the mailbag. It's just kind of how it worked out, Dr. Tom.
Well, okay. So you answered that question.
Yeah, there you go. Now, listen, he wants to know, what about Gerald Briscoe? Do you have any fun Gerald Briscoe stories to share?
Well, I have a lot of Jerry Briscoe stories to share. I mean, I got to tell you, there was a night where Bruce and Jerry were in their room, and I just made it to town. They called me, said, come on down and see us. So I walked in, and of course, they want to play ha-ha, and
they want to play ha-ha.
Yeah, everybody wants to play ha-ha about 12:30, 1 o'clock at night, and you know, so everyone wants to try and hook Briscoe and try and hook me and all this other stuff. And Jerry's an amateur wrestler.
He can
still go. Yeah, he can tie you up in a pretzel in a knot like that. So We tried some wrestling that night, and Briscoe tied me up a couple times, and you know, and but the thing is that when I walked in that night to Bruce's room with Jerry, so they're both trying to hook me, and they've got my back to the sliding glass door. They have a little what's it called outside?
The patio.
Patio. Thank you, man. Anyway, so and as I'm backing up, you know, and the door's open, I'm backing out the door, and all of a sudden I feel a presence behind me, and there's Kurt Angle. So they're setting me up for Kurt to waist lock me and shit, but they could feel my demeanor was, guys, I'm not gonna go down easy on this. You're gonna have to really yeah, and they didn't, so they let me alone. But then later on was when Briscoe and everybody started playing around. And it starts out fun. You know, it's all funny until, you know, somebody gets really stretched and hurt, and then it's hilarious. That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody starts getting a little serious.
A little serious there. And I'm not that serious about it. You can beat me. I don't care. Pin me, pay me. So yeah, that's one story I can tell. There's others that I probably shouldn't and won't.
Oh
no, listen. Dude. Hey man, look, I have done the craziest, most impossible, stupid, embarrassing, ridiculous things on earth. And the more I think about it, the more, you know, somebody asked me about writing a book. I don't know about writing
a book. You don't know if you're ready to expose yourself in that way.
I really don't, man, because we had somebody try it before, and just reading the things and remembering what I said.
So embarrassing.
Yeah, and then it's on record. You go, what?
Yeah.
No. Your
perception of Dr. Tom changes forever.
Yeah, I don't care about my perception. I just don't really want it to be verified.
Listen, you know, I was just thinking, can you imagine being a member of hotel staff, maybe the doors propped open, and you walk by and you just see all these men in there just doing all this stuff, thinking, what in the holy hell is happening?
What do you mean all these men in there doing all
this
stuff?
I mean, just, well,
I'm
you
not
know,
quite
you got,
sure where you're going with that.
It's just, if they don't know anything about wrestling, it's like, hey, well, come down here, let's play ha-ha.
And even if they do know, man, they kind of go, oh, wait a minute.
It's like, okay, it's one thing if it's kids, you know, wrestling around, but it's like there's just grown men in there trying to, you know, it's just funny.
Well, Briscoe wasn't playing. He wanted to let you know he could kind of like the cat with a mouse. Hey,
gotcha.
Over here. Yeah.
Yeah. That was just it. It seemed like he really liked to do that, though, with guys.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
I had him. Here's another real quick story. I can't tell you, when I was in Atlanta and I was starting at just a young punk, and Jerry's I was working with Jerry in a match, and the guys, Tommy Rich and everybody, the Armstrongs, started saying, oh yeah, Briscoe's going to put your head up. Yeah. She's going to stretch you. And I'm starting to think, I don't really know Jerry that well right now. And Jerry.
Yeah. I don't know that I'm prepared for my head. Ass. Yeah. Mm.
So Jerry took me off the side. Said, hey, listen, when we go out there, I want you to move. I'm going to give it to the boys. Let the boys see it. You know, like you escaped, or just whatever I do, counter it and do it quickly, do it right away. We're gonna play with the boys a little bit. So we did that, but they knew, but Jerry liked to play with them too, just like I wasn't cooperating, but I think everybody understood. Nah, I'm gonna cooperate.
Good stuff, man. Love it. David Diamond, our buddy from Australia, is next. Dr. Tom, when you were training Mr. McMahon, did you have to do it at strange times like the hours Vince does his workouts? And also, did you train Shane and Stephanie, and how well do they pick it up? So let's first start with the Vince and the crazy workout hours.
Yeah, and I've mentioned this before, where if he would get done working late at night, I mean, we've been down there at 1 a.m. In the studio working, just because he wanted to and he could. And I wasn't married then, and I was available. That's what you had to be. So it was fine, because there again, that was one of those surreal things when you talk about, why would you want to live in Stanford? Well, because you're accessible, and you go down and you're working with Vince McMahon.
Were you single in Stanford or married?
I was single and married in Stanford. I got married in 2000, but I was in Stanford from 96 to, you know, even when
so
I got married.
So did you meet your wife there in Stanford?
No, I met my wife in Pensacola.
Oh, wow.
But okay. but we hadn't, that was years before, and then we just by chance got together, and then we were doing the weekend meetup.
Back and forth thing.
Back and forth thing, and then eventually it all kind of came together, and I found out she, besides being beautiful, I thought she was a really nice person. So,
So the double.
Because I wasn't going for the personality, Paul. I wasn't going for the personality, and that no good, not no good, but she won me over by being nice and actually showing me that she could talk and was intelligent and have a conversation. I couldn't do that with a lot of people.
And, I was going to ask you what the single scene looked like in Stanford while you
were there. Was no single scene, man. I didn't do any of that thing, man. I was working the whole time. That's a full-time gig when you're up there.
I bet you, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
You hear that enough from Bruce. It's just insane.
And that's the thing. I didn't have his schedule, but on my schedule, it was full-time. And it was, everything was booked up. So the weekends before we would fly out on Sunday, if I could get out on Friday, we would meet either in Nashville or Knoxville or somewhere else.
Gotcha.
We have a destination. And again, I found when I met her again,
with her. Yeah.
I went, wow, man, is this a rib? Is she going to change? You know, right. but she didn't change. So I said, this is what I have to keep.
Yep, got to keep her. Yep. What about Shane and Stephanie? Did you talk about them and picking it up? And did you train Stephanie at all?
Trained Stephanie and Shane and Vince. So the only one I really didn't train was Linda. And Shane picked it up. Shane is a wild man, but Shane is a great guy. He's a lot of fun too. But man, when his fuse is lit, he's on fire. He doesn't know an off switch. He's like Vince. He's very intense. Stephanie, same way. So I think the work ethic,
yeah,
is certainly something they all share. And it was a lot of fun. Shane was great. Stephanie was great. And Vince was great. It was just, it was whatever time he could do it, would do it. I did it.
I'm a huge fan. So Shane and Stephanie, but Stephanie could be such an awesome character in terms of a heat magnet, just everything. I'm a big fan of hers.
Yeah. And, but that's the thing. I understood where Stephanie was at, I think, at that time. And she was so professional and so good in everything she did back then. And I'm sure she's just as good and professional back right now.
All right. Up next is Jeff, not the former Titans coach, Fisher. And he says, Dr. Tom, I've been watching the 1983 episodes of World Class Championship Wrestling on Peacock. A late spring 1983 episode featured a 6-man tag match that had 2 referees in the ring. Some episodes featured matches with an additional referee outside the ring, but this one had the extra ref in the ring. Does this extra referee make it more challenging on the wrestlers in terms of having less space to work with? And does this make the matches too cluttered?
Most definitely. And I think that's why they changed it. When I first came to Houston, I saw 2 referees in tag matches. And that was in the late 60s, early 70s. And then they decided and realized they obviously made the rule at one time for some reason. And I wasn't around for that reason. Don't know why. But I'm sure they came to the conclusion you're making it harder for the heels to get heat. You're putting more heat on the referee. And I think it really did make it cluttered. And I believe the guys by the mid-70s at least, or shortly into the 1970s, they did away with 2 referees at ring for tag matches. So, yeah, I certainly think it was cluttered. I've seen those before.
Yeah. All right. Now, great question. And we'll move on to Amy Vaughn. And she said, first of all, Dr. Tom, you are super wonderful. And I cannot wait to come visit you and the JPWA again.
Always welcome, Amy. You know that.
She said, my question is, what are the true rules to a Texas tornado match and a Texas death match? Best wishes.
Well, I don't really know that there are any differences between the rules. It's just last man standing. You've got to be on your feet before your opponent by the count of 10. And no disqualification. Anything goes. You can bring a chainsaw to the ring, cut your opponent's head off as long as it goes back on at the end of the match. And, you know, just I think the names were to dress it up and obviously give the drama and more appeal as opposed to saying, these fellas going to go out and fight till they win. No, Texas Deathmatch sounds a little more Texas Deathmatch. And I remember Los Angeles used to have a board when Jeff Walton was doing promos, and it would say Texas Deathmatch with the blood dripping and the skull and bones, and you know, no disqualification, 10 count rule, falls don't count, doesn't matter, last man to stand up before his opponent wins. And it was all in the cell, all in the drama, and all in the presentation. So they were basically the same thing.
Just has a lot more gravitas, has a lot more oomph.
Yeah, it's true. You call it a street fight, Chicago street fight, Texas death match,
yeah.
You know, stuff like that.
All right, our buddy Matt Sandrovasi is back this week, and he said, what did you think of the Young Rock TV show, and will there be a Dr. Tom character since you trained him?
I've seen a couple episodes. Nobody's reached out to me about telling me there's going to be, but I don't know, man. I don't know.
Well, listen, he also wants to go on and talk about the big debate on ad-free shows, and that's between Conrad and Arn Anderson, and it all started about a hamburger. And you got to choose one. What belongs on Dr. Tom's hamburger? Cheese or bacon, or let's throw it and say both or neither.
Both.
I
am a look. I'll tell you this. Here's a secret. I am a mark for Wendy's, and I'm keeping it down here now. A Wendy's single with bacon, cheese, ketchup, and mustard.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah. And the diet lemonade.
Okay.
The regular lemonade is tremendous, but it's too much sugar. And I'm starting to look at that stuff even more again. So a single Wendy's bacon cheeseburger classic with ketchup, mustard only, medium diet lemonade makes an afternoon fly.
No fries?
No fries.
Huh. Just the sandwich and the drink.
Yes. Fries are just a sometimes food, Paul.
Okay.
Can't eat fries all the time. You can eat bacon cheeseburgers all the time.
How often would you say you're going for that bacon cheeseburger in a week? Maybe once a week?
Last summer, I was a glutton, and it was a daily thing.
Wow.
You know, Dave Thomas used to eat a double fries and a Frosty every day for lunch for I don't know how many years. Whew. Yeah, that's why he got a heart attack too. I mean, I don't do it all the time, but when I do it, man, that's the way.
Arn doesn't like cheese on his burgers. He doesn't want anything, no cheese on a burger.
I can understand that. I can go there too.
Really?
I can go. My standard burger is lettuce, tomato, pickle, mustard. But if I'm going to do something special, I want a bacon cheeseburger, I just want ketchup and mustard. Don't want to mix the flavors.
Wow. Now that I'm hungry.
Yeah.
I know where you're headed today.
Yeah, exactly.
Michael Green asked a question. We got to it on the last show. I'll still read through it. He said, first of all, thank you for continuing the contribution to the wrestling business, Dr. Tom. And his question was about Bruce telling the story about you getting your hair cut, portraying Zip of the Bonadonnas, your reaction to getting shorn and getting that dye job. Did you ever give Bruce a receipt for that one? He wants to know.
You know,
or do you still owe him?
Huh?
Or do you still owe him a receipt? You think?
Yeah, I'm sure I might have, but certainly not in the way of a haircut, obviously. But, I don't I don't believe he ever got a receipt. I don't know if a receipt's coming. I don't know if it's one of those things where you look at and you go, if I wouldn't have done that, then I wouldn't have got this. That's the way I have to look at it.
There you go. I like it. Exactly. And then he goes on to say, also, Paulie, we keep killing it. Big man, you're awesome. Hey, Michael, thank you. I'm just having fun, brother. It's unbelievable. I get to work with a guy by the name of Dr. Tom Pritchard.
Or some people know me as Dr. John Richards.
We got to find out about that. Lenny Bakken is up, and he's got our final questions this week, Dr. Tom. And he says, when Dr. Tom was Zip, what are his memories of Jimmy Shoulders as Cloudy? Did Jimmy embrace the gimmick, and did WWF ever try to do anything else with him?
Yeah, Jimmy, he embraced the gimmick. It was a job. It was something he was offered. So, yeah, that was the idea when pitched to us by Vince himself in Madison Square Garden, no less, that Chris looked at me and said, that's the stupidest, pardon my language, but I have to say it, fucking idea I've ever heard. And I agreed with him, but I didn't say anything because once again, when you're walking around going, oh man, and you just have nothing else, you don't have a better idea. What do you say? We don't want to do that. Okay, what do you want to do? Not be a body downer? That's not an option. So anyway, yeah, it Jimmy embraced it. I didn't. I mean, look, you're taking away the number one downloaded diva, cute little Tammy, and going to put us with it. Guy dressed as Tammy and call him Cloudy?
What?
Well, let me see. Are you trying to bury us?
Yeah.
No, we're not trying. It's been done. No, we don't have to try, pal. Already,
yeah
right. You've already been laying in your grave for a while. You just didn't realize it. So
that's great.
Yeah. But Cloudy loved it. Jimmy loved it.
Yeah, there you go. Lenny with the last question of the week, and this is all about the man who liked to pat himself on the back.
Of course.
In 1995, Barry Horowitz received his one and only push in the WWF. Does Dr. Tom recall if the boys were happy for him to finally get some airtime, or maybe the opposite, since he was taking up TV time that they weren't getting? Up until that point, he had always been enhancement talent.
Yeah, but everybody liked Barry because he really was a good guy. He was a great person. He's a good guy. He knew what he was there for too, and I thought Barry Horowitz was great and gave him an opportunity. Why not, man? If you get a shot, you should be happy for people. If they get an opportunity, why not be happy, man? And I think that was the overall attitude and that was the overall feeling, man. Eventually, you get an opportunity. May not be the biggest, may not be the greatest, but you know what? He had a damn T-shirt. We didn't. Nobody done a T-shirt. Nobody done a video game.
I was going to say, Barry Horowitz probably made the video game, too.
And so we never had dolls or action figures, stuff like that. So, I mean, yeah, man. I mean, I'm very happy for him. But, you know, looking back on it and wondering why everything is the way it is and was the way it was, it's because that was the way it was supposed to be, unless we changed it. So, but I think everybody's happy for Barry.
That's great. Well, listen, that is going to wrap us up for another Monday mailbag with the doctor himself, Mr. Tom Pritchard. Dr. Tom, listen, go out to Wendy's today. Get yourself that single, that bacon, that cheeseburger with ketchup and mustard and a diet lemonade. You deserve it because you did a fantastic job answering all these folks' questions this week. Guys, continue to send your question in. Guys and girls, we want to hear from you. This is awesome. We're getting to know Dr. Tom every other Monday here on ad-free shows, exclusively on ad-free shows. Dr. Tom, thank you so much again for your time this week.
Well, thank you, Paul. I know it takes a lot of time out of your schedule, too. You're doing all these other podcasts. And man, oh, man, I don't know how you do it, but I'm glad you're doing it, man. Yes.
It's juggling, baby, juggling, time management. It's all it is, brother.
When you start having those thoughts, though, in the back of your head, it's time to back away for a second. Just breathe and take your time. Calm down. You see those two chairs behind you? Yes. Throw the one to your left first.
Okay.
Make sure the one to the left is thrown first. I know this from experience, just so you know.
Okay. You know what I've come to learn?
What's
value your downtime. Value it. Take advantage of it. Appreciate it.
Just, yes. When that's why happens. I say. When I found out I could actually talk to this woman, I said, yeah, I'm going to have to keep her. And then I realized that that's valuable.
Yeah, you got it. Well, we hope you enjoyed this valuable time with Dr. Tom this week. And we will be back again in 2 weeks with another mailbag, a Monday mailbag with Dr. Tom. We'll see you next time.